Darren, Matt from Big Matt and Chill. Just ringing to share a milestone with you. I just did my 700th fish out of water in Holbrook. Amazing to see a submarine where there really shouldn't be one. Anyway, I'll catch up with you later. See you.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we speak to Filma from Sydney about hiding and finding caches in an urban environment, and we listen to some of your geocaching New Year's resolutions. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 23 of GeoTalk. It's Spindock Bob again, coming to you from the GeoGolf, from inside my car. We're out geocaching at the moment. There's a bit of rain, as you can probably hear outside, so I thought rather than get wet, we'll do it along the way. I'm doing a few caches around the Hurstville area of Sydney this afternoon, so I'll take you around with me on some of those caches. Some of you might know I've just come back from the United States, visiting Las Vegas and San Diego. While I was in Las Vegas, I was actually there as part of the Consumer Electronics Show. And I'll talk to you a little bit about that in a sec, about some of the products that were there, particularly GPS products. But also, while I was in San Diego, I visited Sunny and Sandy, who are the hosts of the original Geocaching podcast and the longest running. I think they're into their fourth year now, and that is Podcacher, or Podcacher, depending on which part of the world you're from. And you should check out their podcast if you haven't already. It's up to episode 149 by the time this one goes to air. So there's heaps of content for you to listen to. And they were kind enough to take me geocaching around the San Diego area and even south of the border down into Mexico. And that was a lot of fun. Now, I'm not going to go into detail into what happened while I was there because it's all part of the Podcacher podcast. So check out episode 148 and 149, 150. They do a bit of an interview talking about geocaching, interview with me talking about geocaching in Australia. And also we talk about geocaching in the United States and some of the differences between the two. While I was there also, I spoke to them about what it's like caching in the US, and I hope I haven't confused you all, but that's going to appear in GeoTalk episode 24. So if you want to listen to the three of us all talking away, check out Podcacher at podcacher.com and listen to upcoming episode of GeoTalk episode 24. One of the other things that I did over the last couple of weeks was I passed a milestone, and that's always great. It's always good to sort of, you know, see the double zero on the end of your number of finds. And, of course, like most people these days who, when they get to a milestone, like to find a fairly interesting cache. And in this particular case, we did the final cut, which is located out in the Vaucluse region of Sydney and the eastern suburbs, and it's hidden in a cliff, which is a spectacular bit of scenery on the shoreline of Sydney. And that'll be part of a GeoTalk video edition coming up very soon. We've got three that'll be coming out in the next few weeks, one from my trip to Taiwan, one where Web Guy takes us around the Lithgow area of the Blue Mountains, and then that one that I just mentioned, the final cut, which was done with a group of geocachers. And thank you very much to all those who came along for the walk. Some of them had already done it before, but decided they wanted to do it again, and that was a really good fun time. One of the things that I did in Las Vegas was, of course, a bit of caching along with a bit of gambling and also checking out CES. It's interesting over in Las Vegas that they have quite a number of virtuals. And I suppose in areas such as that, it's a bit hard to hide a cache and not have it go missing, because those areas are so well maintained and caches are going to be found fairly quickly. And it got me thinking that it would be good to see virtuals come back into geocaching.com. And I mentioned in the last episode, in GeoTalk episode 22, that Groundspeak looking at releasing a new database design, so that and one of the things that they've hinted about is that they're going to merge geocaching and waymarking back together, along with another application which is just being released called whereigo.com. Now, if you haven't checked that out, that's an interesting sort of GPS game, and it is more of a game than what geocaching and waymarking are about. And at the moment, you'll need either a pocket PC, I think running Windows mobile application or operating system, or you need the new Garmin Colorado. And that's one of the things that was unveiled at CES. in Las Vegas earlier in the month, and it's a fantastic-looking unit. I got the chance to hold it. Didn't really get to do much with it because it was all indoors and it was attached to a cable. But get online and check that out. It looks similar to the 60C series. But there, instead of all these buttons, there's actually a wheel that's located at the top. And it's a big screen, LCD screen, that's on it. And it also has Wi-Fi built in and a lot of memory. And it's being seen, as I suppose, as the next generation of GPS devices. And you're going to see similar things. Magellan had on display the Triton, which I thought looked a bit bricky or blocky. But obviously those who prefer the Magellan device should check that one out as well. So those were some interesting devices. Also on display were a lot of in-car GPSs from different manufacturers, such as Mio, Magellan, Garmin, TomTom, and so forth. They all had their different devices, and we're seeing a lot more sort of bells and whistles being thrown into these, probably to compete with some of the mobile phone manufacturers who are now putting GPS in their mobile phones. So I think you're going to see over the next few months some fairly interesting GPS devices out on the market. Well, now I'm off to find the next waypoint in this geocache. So while I go heading off to that, it's time now for Geocacher Profile. On this episode of GeoTalk, we're speaking to Sydney geocacher Fulmer. Fulmer, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, you've been geocaching for a few years, and I've seen your name pop up on logs. How long ago did you start, and what got you into geocaching?
I started in 2004, and my son accidentally found a geocache when he was working down at Coogee, brought it home, and we saw geocaching.com, went onto the website, found out what it was all about, signed the log, replaced the cache, and I happened to have an old GPS. And it started me off.
And out of interest, I mean, how many caches have you found now, and what are some of the areas that you've found them in?
My tally's around about 820, and I've found them from Queensland down to Melbourne and some in Western Australia. But my goal is to do them around the world eventually.
And do you find that there's any difference amongst caches here in Sydney to those, say, in Queensland or Melbourne or other parts of the country?
Caches, I find, I've been restricted on how many I've done interstate, but the quality of a cache in Sydney, and I'm not being biased, they just seem to be a better quality cache. But having said that, I haven't done the major cities and the tricky ones probably that I have in Sydney. I don't know, I'm just trying to be fair there.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I know that a number of people we've spoken to on the program and also just in travelling around have said that Sydney caches are sometimes the harder ones to find because they're so well put together. But that's not taking it away from any of the other cities. But, you know, we'll get some email traffic over that. So take us through some of the more interesting caches that you've found and maybe even placed over the last few years.
Yeah, I enjoy all sorts of caches. I like the inner city caches. Obviously, I've got quite a few of those. And I also like the bush caches where you've got to do a bit of work to get to your cache. And I like the puzzle caches. I mean, they sort of get the brain working.
So let's have a look at some of the bush ones then. Is There was one that you mentioned earlier to me, Panorama, that you found recently. Take us through that and why you found that to be an enjoyable cache.
Yeah, well, Hound Dog put me onto that one. He said it was a very, very difficult cache to do. He told me he had to actually bush bash through the scrub to get to it. But when I read the logs, there was a track between Brooklyn and Cowan that branched off. And I looked at it on Google Earth and decided to do it. Now, that's give yourself a day to do that one. It is an enjoyable walk. You're fairly high when you're going across the top of the escarpment. And there are some really good stuff to come across. I found some Aboriginal carvings in rock. And there are the old stone trig stations, a couple of them. If you look at the cache page, my cache page, you'll see a couple of photos of both those. But it is an enjoyable walk. I did it one out. I wouldn't suggest anyone do that. take a partner.
Now, some of the urban caches that you've done, is there one that stands out that you found that you've said, oh, well, that was a clever design, or that was a clever way of doing it?
Yeah, my all-time favourite one, I can't remember the name of it, but it's over on the North Shore, and it was fairly well disguised as part of the gantry, and that was one of my favourites.
Well, let's talk about urban caches then, because you've hidden quite a number in Sydney, and it's frustrated a number of us. I think anyone who's seen the logs for five keys in a row will know that I was thoroughly frustrated by that cache. I think that took me four goes and a fairly big hint from you in the end. What makes a good urban cache one hidden in the city, and what are some of the things that if someone like myself was going to hide one, I should take into account?
Okay, when I'm doing mine, I try to have location or some history attached to the cache. Most of my caches obviously are designed for everyone, but more so the tourist. So I put my caches where there's a good view or there is some history. Like I've got one at Railway under the clock, and I've got one at Town Hall now, and actually one at Star City where you've got to go into Star City. So all those particular caches are either designed for a view of the city or some part of history.
So the location is important, and having something to hang on to that location is important. But in the actual design of the cache as well, what sort of things do you take into account? Because you seem to put quite a lot of work into the containers that you use. You just don't buy a magnetic container and just stick it anywhere, do you?
No, I don't. I take pride in my caches. I maintain them, and I've designed the caches with my son Lyle. We use the micros I use are normally key boxes, and then I put my own cover on them and varnish them and do my own books and pencils and stuff like that. But that's just me. I mean, that's how I like to have my caches. When I place the cache, I try to make it reasonably difficult for anyone to stumble across them accidentally. That's probably why the frustration's there with you guys when you try to find them. Yeah. But I'm always open for a tip. I mean, if you ask me, I'll tell you.
You mentioned to me earlier that one of your favourites is Dragon Tail over in Dixon, which is the Chinatown area of in Chinatown area of Sydney, and that you've done some modifications to that. I mean, tell us a little bit about that cache.
Okay, that cache, I put it in Muggle area, like heavily. Dixon Street's probably one of the busiest streets in Sydney, and it sits right in the middle of Dixon Street. And I have lost it twice, I think, and it's been replaced twice. But the reason why it's in Dixon Street is it's Chinatown, it's got history, it pulls people down into that area that haven't been there before. There's plenty of restaurants, and it's a clever hide as far as I'm concerned. And, just the fact that it's lasted so long, well, then there's been nearly 200 hits on it. It's a popular cache, and it's in a high Muggle area, so, yeah.
On the subject of Muggles, I mean, those of us who then go to find them usually encounter them, particularly in the city. What are some of the tips you've got for ensuring that you don't cause too much attention when you're looking for a cache?
Look important. Make out as if you're doing some work around the area, or make out as if you're surveying something. Me, I use a clipboard and count nuts and bolts or anything, and people think, oh yeah, he knows what he's doing and you're really looking for a cache. I don't know what other people's lurks and perks are, trying not to be detected, but believe me, in the inner city, when you're looking for something, you do look a bit conspicuous.
Now, I forgot to ask you earlier on, I mean, what is it that you enjoy about geocaching, and what motivates you to continue doing it?
Well, other people, like myself, place caches for certain reasons, to get you into an area. I just like going to the places where I've never been before. And geocaching opens everything up. I mean, I can look at the map and think, God, I haven't been in there. And normally when you get into a place, you know as well as I do, Darren, it's some of them are absolutely spectacular. I must say, when I was in Tasmania, I went into some waterfalls and various places with fantastic views that I would never have gone into without geocaching.
Now, without giving too much away, you've got a cache on the cliffs at Dover Heights, which is in the eastern suburbs facing the Pacific Ocean, and it's listed as a premium members only cache. Now, I know with some geocaches that it's a touchy subject, but we've discussed it this morning, and I've had a good look at it, and there's a good reason why. Take us through, without giving too much away, that cache and why you've listed it as a premium member only cache.
Okay. For the Sydney metropolitan area, it's probably one of the more dangerous type caches you could do in regards to terrain. You've physically got to get yourself up and down 600 feet of cliff face, and you know the way I've done it in the past is I've been a fisherman down there. You go down unroped. Well, would you use a harness? No harness. And it's quite a dangerous cache. So I've listed that as a premium members-only cache just to keep the kids and the inexperienced people away from it. That's the sole reason I did that. And the reason I placed the cache in the first place is you don't get any caches around Sydney that give you that sort of excitement right in the heart of the metropolitan area. The fact that only one person's ever been down there to get it over the 1.5 years that it's been in place, I think, speaks for itself.
Well, we'll hopefully boost that number in the next few months. We'll see how we go.
Well, I'd love to come down with you too, so, yeah, I'd prefer to come down and show you guys the ropes.
All right, well, that'll be coming in an upcoming episode. But look, as we enjoy this sunshine, this summer day here at Homebush Bay, thanks very much, Filmer, for joining me on GeoTalk.
My pleasure, Darren.
Well, that was Filmer there from Sydney. And if you ever get into the Sydney area and do a bit of geocaching, you're sure to encounter some of his caches in the CBD region. And, well, a lot of them well worth doing, particularly that Dragon Tales one that he mentioned there. All right, well, I've made it to the third waypoint, actually, of this cache as we're travelling around. We've actually gone a little bit eastwards away from the Hurstville area and staring at a park now. So I've got my fingers crossed that that's going to be it. But I'm going to have to pull out my umbrella because it's the rain is getting a little bit heavier, which is not unusual at this time of the year here in Sydney. It's either hot and humid or it's wet and humid. Take your pick. Well, last episode, I unveiled a competition to get you a bit more involved in the podcast, and you certainly have. I've received quite a few emails, some of them written and some of them with audio files attached, for the competition on your New Year's resolution, your New Year's geolution, as some people have called it. And here are some of the entries that are going into the draw to win the Spinner Geocoin. First one's from Echo and Spice, and they have four resolutions. One is to learn how to judge distances better with their GPS. I think most of us, even who have been doing it for a while, would love to do that. Reach 300 plus caches, get Discover Australia maps and topos, and meet lots of local geocache crazies. So that's from Echo and Spice. Our next entry is from Trail Geek, who mentions, first of all, that they've just got their first MP3 player for Christmas and they're catching up on GeoTalk episodes. Hope you're enjoying them. Their resolution is, first of all, to win the coin. Well, I think most people would like that. But they're aiming to break the record over in WA for the most number of finds in 24 hours, which is currently 26 from the Nobodies. And they're hoping to hit about 40, and they're going to take the video camera along with that. So hopefully we might see that footage in the not-too-distant future. Another one from Ziggelfin, also known as Keith, wants to say thanks for the podcast, and they'll keep tuning in. Well, thank you very much. Their New Year's caching resolution is to get a couple of first to find to break the 200 found mark, or even better, past 300 caches, and also to hide a few more so that everyone else can enjoy them. Alex, who I presume is Alex from Adelaide, who actually, if it's the one I'm thinking, hid the very first cache in the ACT and one of the very first caches that I found. He says that his New Year's resolution is to try and increase his yearly average to more than 25 a year. He says he must be the slowest geocacher in Australia. Well, nothing wrong with that as long as you're enjoying it. So good luck with that, Alex. And another one before we go to a bit of a break, from Auckland over in New Zealand, Indiana Jill, also known as Jill Shaw, says that she's new to geocaching, only been doing it since the 31st of December, 07, so that's fairly recent. Discovered the podcast on iTunes, and they're a Mac user, and they're just trying to get together things, work out how to get the files transferring from into the GPS receiver, into the Palm or the iPod. And they're hoping to make it across to Australia later this year and find a few caches on Australian turf. So good luck to that. Well, here's some audio files that have come in. The first one's from from Daryl W4 and Firefly over in the United States. They're the hosts of the Cachemaniacs podcast, and here's their New Year's resolution.
Hey, Spindock Bob. This is Firefly 03 of the Cachemaniacs, and I'll let Daryl W4 speak in just a moment. But first, I have to congratulate you on the coming arrival. You and Mommy must be very proud.
And I wanted to thank you for the support of the Cachemaniacs, and especially the kind words for our first year. We've had 4 Australian interviews this past year, Cached on episode 44, Dax Emu Bob on episode 42, Bronze on episode 36, and you missed the most important one, you, on episode 20. It's all good, though. Thanks for helping us connect with the Australian cachers for the interviews. We're looking forward to speaking with more in the coming year.
Well, let's move on to our geocaching New Year's resolutions. Mine is to be better about moving travelers. Unfortunately, I've slipped a little bit in moving some of the bugs and coins last year and had them sitting in my cash bank longer than I'd liked. So this year, I'll make sure to get those travelers into caches or pass them off just as soon as I can.
Then mine is to get better about logging our finds. Especially since Firefly03 and I have started to merge our separate GC accounts into one, I can't slack off like I have these last few months. I need to not log just the time through the WAP interface while we're in the field, but edit and fill out those logs within a day at most of arriving home. As we're recording this, it's not quite New Year's Day yet, and I still have yet to edit those time-only WAP logs from about a month ago.
I think we all have some aspect of caching that we'd like to improve on. So from Daryl and I, good luck and happy caching in 2008.
Now, don't forget, if you've got a New Year's resolution that you want to send in, you've still got a few more days to get it in. Entries close on January the 26th, which those of us in Australia know that's Australia Day, so that's a week from now. You can get them in, and the winner will receive a Spinner Geocoin, which is featured on the website. Just be randomly drawn from the list of all those who have submitted. So thank you very much to those who have so far, and we'll read a few more out in a little later in the podcast. Now, you might have realized at the start, I forgot to ask the GeoTalk Trivia Challenge question. This one, if you've read the forums recently, you probably know what the answer to this is. Who are the slowest geocaches to reach 1,000 finds? So the slowest 1,000 finders in Australia. The answer to that at the end of this podcast.
Miss Wibble here from Team Wibble. We failed at our New Year's caching resolution last year, which was to find all Zitheran caches published up to, but not including Beyond Ultraviolet. We fell 2 caches short of this goal. So it might sound a bit silly that our New Year's caching resolution this year involves Zitheran caches as well. South Australians will understand just how dangerous this is. Our goal is to find every cache that Zitheran publishes this year. This goal has a few problems, namely being that we don't actually know what we're getting ourselves in for, and perhaps more problematically, once Zitheran hears this, knowing his personality, it might spur him on to place even more difficult caches than he normally would, which is inconceivable. Our goal looked doomed from the start when on January 7th, the first Zitheran cache of the year was published, and it was a 5-5. However, it's January the 8th, and we've just found it. We're off to a good start. But wish us luck, because we're going to need it.
My New Year's resolution. I'm going to work out actually how to use my GPS. I've had it for several years. I started reading the manual ages ago and I gave up. I still can't work out which direction to go for the south and east readings. I wander all over an area like a mad dog's breakfast to try and align up both readings on my GPS. So I resolved to save myself time and actually work out how to use this thing. My name, geocaching name, is Mundu, and I'm from South Australia.
Got a couple more to read out for this particular episode of GeoTalk. The next one comes from Kathy, also known as Red Tag, down in Tasmania. Now, you might realise that in episode 22, Red Tag was mentioned as the most obsessed geocacher in Australia. And she had a bit of a laugh about that. Now, I'm not going to go into too much detail in the email because I think Red Tag is probably worthy of a GeoTalk profile. So hopefully we'll get in touch with Kathy in the next few weeks and find out a little bit more about her geocaching obsession. Anyway, her geocaching resolution, not surprisingly, is to maintain the obsession. And that has two exclamation points, which for someone with a journalistic background, that must mean a lot. A couple of more to go through. Tilby from the ACT, who I found a couple of caches of Tilby's over the last few months, says that they would like to get a new GPS to replace their old faithful yellow e-trax. They would like to move to paperless geocaching finally, and they want to get to 1,000 finds. Our next geocaching resolution is from South Australia. It's from Margot, also known as Crane 2, who says that they're already doing the New Year's resolution, which is fairly simple, and that is to cache more often. They said in the last 18 months, they've only found 14 caches, but already in January 2008, they've doubled it up to 34. So they're doing quite well. Also from Doobie Doo 3, their New Year's resolution for 2008 is to find 150 finds and to hide at least 15 geocaches. And our final geocaching resolution for 2008 comes all the way from Michigan in the United States, Roger over in South Lyon or Leon, whichever way you pronounce it. He says that he would like to find a cache in every county in the state. Now, it sounds like a bit of a feat, and in fact he says it's an admirable feat if you can do it, because there are 83 counties in the state of Michigan. He has 38 counties to go. He's confident that he'll finish the Lower Peninsula this year, and if it all falls into place, should get the Upper Peninsula as well. And I have no doubt that it's quite a challenge at this time of the year, because it's minus 8 degrees Celsius right now, he writes in the email. Well, that's all for the geocaching resolutions for this particular episode. Don't forget, you've got till the end of this week to get your entry in. I might bend the rules a little bit and allow you an extra few days or so, because it's a long weekend this weekend down here in Australia with the Australia Day weekend. So send your email in to geotalk@mac.com, or you can call it in on the GeoTalk Skype hotline, which is 02-800-50436. So that's 02-800-50-GEO. And if you get it in time, you'll go into the draw for the Spinner Geo coin. You can probably notice by the difference in the sound that I've returned back from our geocaching trip. It wasn't a very successful one. It was only out for 2 hours and I got 1 out of 3. Unfortunately, I think the first one that I was looking for has gone AWOL. I think it's been muggled because the area had been cleaned up. The second one was successful, the one that I was finding all the waypoints for, and I noticed that there was another one about 500 meters away, and I didn't realize until after I got to the destination that it's one of the trickiest and probably one of the oldest caches in Sydney. So unfortunately, after about half an hour of searching, I didn't find it, so it looks like I'll be back again, possibly this weekend. Okay, a few things to get through. First of all, events that are occurring around the country. On the 10th of February, over on South Moreton Bay Island, now that's just off the northern part of the Gold Coast or south of Brisbane, they'll be holding the Island Time geocaching event. So that's on the 10th of February. And on the 2nd of March, the ACT Cache of the Year on Lake Burley Griffin. And the prizes for that event were being donated by the Great Outdoors Centre in Phillip. And if you've done any geocaching in the ACT, in the Capital Territory or around the Canberra area, check out the forum listing and I'll give you a link to the show notes and you can nominate a cache or even vote for it once the voting period has opened. So that's on the 2nd of March. Now, you might have also remembered that over the last two episodes I've mentioned that we were going to feature audio from the Bathurst 24-hour event. Now, I've been in touch with Bronze, who recorded those interviews. Unfortunately, he has had a technical problem and he won't be able to get those files to me for another few more weeks until he gets back to Dubbo. So unfortunately, we won't be able to give you those straight away, but we'll feature some of those interviews in an upcoming episode in the not-too-distant future. Two emails coming into the GeoTalk mailbag. First of all, you did hear Big Matt at the start of the show. He just wanted to let me know that over the Christmas they did a fair bit of travelling. In fact, they did 5,500 kilometres of travelling and listened to every GeoTalk episode. You poor people, why did you do that? Anyway, they said, love it, keep up the great work. The one thing that disturbed me a little bit was in their email signature, it said, never mess with a geocacher. We know all the best places to hide a body. I don't think I'd want to cross Big Matt and co. And also an email from Mark at Go Northwest. He has been dropping CDs of geocaching podcasts around the world, in fact, over in Asia and in Arizona, which I managed to put foot in while I was over in Las Vegas. Has dropped a couple of them around the place, so thank you very much for doing that. Also, a bit of a mention for two things that are out in the market at the moment or out in the world. First of all, the Geocacher magazine. It's available around the world, and Michael Jacobus, the publisher of that from the United States, sent me an email just to let me know that he's received quite a few subscriptions from Australia. I'd like to thank all the Australians for that. And if you haven't checked it out, go to geocachermagazine.com. Also got an email from Dirk Eisner, who runs a website called bepacked.com. So that's bepacked.com. Check that out. That has a collection of different locations and bits of tourist information around Australia. And it's a little bit like a wiki where you can contribute to that and give that information to others. So check that out at www.bepacked.com. Okay, well, before we finish up this episode of GeoTalk, a little bit of housekeeping out of the way. First of all, the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question for this episode, who are the slowest geocachers in Australia to have reached 1,000 finds? Now, the winner of this, or loser, depending on which way you look at it, I think it's a winner in my eyes anyway, is Alex, who I mentioned a little bit earlier in the podcast. And Alex has been geocaching since late 2000, and it took him 2,544 days in which to find his 1,000 caches. Coming up a close second, or not quite close a second, but was Garpy with 2,388, Quasar with 2,233, and Team Unicycle with 2,177. Now, the interesting thing about that, and I'm just going off the top of my head here, but I think at least half, if not more of them, are from South Australia, which is supposedly the geocaching capital of the country. Interesting thing. Okay, in the next episode of GeoTalk, we're going to speak to Sunny and Sandy, who are the hosts of the Podcacher podcast. Now, first of all, a big thank you to the pair of them. I only let them know about a month or two beforehand that I was coming to visit, and I spent the weekend with them, and it was quite a hoot. We visited a couple of caches around San Diego, including one of those infamous LPCs, the Light Post caches, and I will do my best to make sure that they do not infiltrate Australia, even though there are some that disguise themselves in that way. And we also went south of the border down to Tijuana. Now, rather than relive that through this podcast, I recommend that you check episode 148 of the Podcacher podcast. So that's podcacher.com. Check out that episode. It's quite a laugh because you'll find out what happened when we ran into the authorities, not once, but twice, as we were near the Mexican border. So check that out. Well, until next time, safe geocaching and happy Australia Day.